Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 56. On this episode, we talk Calvary. Calvary was one of my favorite films of 2014. To kind of put it in context, Calvary was probably my short-term 12 of 2014. And what I mean by that, for those of you who I haven't explained that to, is it was a smaller film that passed under a lot of radars for a lot of people, but it probably had the most lasting impact on me of any film that I saw of the year. It's starring Brendan Gleeson, Chris O'Dowd, Kelly Riley, a really great, not B-cast, but not people that you typically see in starring roles, but they did an amazing job. Heck, we like this film so much that we actually recorded this episode back in 2014, and I've just been waiting for a great time to release it. Fortunately, with the slow time in really good movies being released at the beginning of the year, plus it being Holy Week this week, just made this the perfect time to get it to you guys. So I would highly recommend you watch this movie before we listen. I know some of you people like to just listen to the show, and I really appreciate that without having actually seen the movie. But I would you should really watch this movie, because we're going to talk a whole bunch of things that's going to kind of ruin the conceit. But it's really powerful either way. We have a really great conversation about forgiveness, empathy, sacrifice, and again, Holy Week. So enjoy it. Here it is, episode 56, Calvary and the Path to the Cross. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. Calvary's a great movie to just exist to be discussed.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to talk about Calvary probably before I even saw it, because I had so many people, you know, like I said, once you do this enough, people start walking up to you, have you seen this, have you seen that? And when people who are on my show start coming up to me and say, have you seen this? I'm like, whoa, whoa, you know, like, this is something I have to see. And so I was already interested in maybe taking a look at it. I mean, I think I got emails from both of you guys specifically, along with two other people who have been on the show before, asking me, like, have I seen Calvary? Am I going to record on Calvary? And I was like, man, I didn't even know. I just saw that it came out and it had Brendan Gleeson in it, and I kind of like him, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But once I saw it, I said, I really want to talk about this. But by the time this movie, or by the time I had seen this movie, you know, we're into, at the time that we record this, lots of movies that are in award consideration are coming out. We've got a pretty packed schedule. We're already doing extra episodes during December to do Christmas episodes, things like that. And I realize that there's a lot of good movies that we've missed on this podcast because they haven't been super duper blockbuster movies. Mm. And that they were highly in need of discussing. Like I said, again, like this movie. So what I think I'm going to start doing is, anytime someone is, or there's a movie like this that lends itself to a great discussion, I think I'm just going to get some people together that want to talk about the movie, and we're going to record the episode. And, you know, should we ever need an episode, you know, should there be a slow time? Because there's always slow times during the year. We'll start putting these episodes out then. So instead of not having anything, we'll be talking about a movie that maybe a lot of people haven't seen, but in most cases, and especially this case, I think this is a movie that more people probably need to see.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm excited about that. But, you know, the full disclosure of who, I'm not real sure when this is going to air. And, you know, if you're listening, you know, I have no idea when you're actually going to be listening to this. But I'm excited about that, because I think there's conversations we missed, and I don't want to miss anymore. And I'm excited to talk about this. And I'm excited that you guys went out of your way to email me just to specifically ask about this movie. And because of that, I want to
continue talking like I've been talking for the past 5 minutes to kind of frame this a little bit and say that Calvary is a lower budget. It's not really like, it's almost an independent film, but it's not quite, it's, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. It's a low release, you know, solid actors. You know, it's got Brendan Gleeson, Chris O'Dowd, Kelly Riley. I mean, these probably aren't A-listers, but they're really solid, you know, next step down people. The director is John Michael Madonna, and the opening scene, you can watch the entirety, or like 4 minutes, I think, of it on YouTube. And that in and of itself, if it doesn't make you want to watch this movie, I'm not sure what will. And to kind of set the stage, the movie is about Father James, a Catholic priest in Ireland, who's Sunday confessionals suddenly include a threat to kill him. And that's what we see in that opening scene, so I don't want to give anything away. Because that in and of itself is the premise of the movie. But he's told in a week's time that someone's threatening to kill him in a week. And so we basically watch him go through a week where he's deeply troubled and very conflicted about how to respond to this threat. And we kind of see him just shepherding his flock, as it were, in that time and wrestling with what he's going to do. So, since I've already kind of given you guys interest away a little bit by saying that you have almost sought me out for this, gratefully, I'm grateful that I was sought out because I really like this movie. But what was it about this movie that once you got done watching it, you said, "Oh man, I've got to email Fizz, or I've got to talk to somebody about it, or I just want to have a conversation about it." What kind of struck you about it? And as always, like Rick, you're the one on Skype, so you get to answer almost every question first. So
okay.
I hope you're excited about that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I remember walking out of the theater, and I was actually with a friend of mine who's a fellow worship leader, pastor, and we both were kind of like stunned to silence, I think, for the first few minutes, because we weren't sure exactly what to think about it, and we left, we got a quick bite to eat, and we went out to lead music at a worship service that same day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like, we were like in this mode of like, wow, we're transcending something here. But I honestly told him, I said, you know, I'm just going to have to think about this movie a while, because I don't even know what to think of it yet, you know, because it's been so it's so affected me for a couple weeks even after I saw it. And I think what was so powerful to me is the title is perfect, because this movie, in my view anyway, and there's a lot of readings of it, I'm sure, but in my view, it seems like this film is almost an allegory of Holy Week. Of the last week in the life of Christ, of you know, when he knows there's what's lying ahead, and yet choosing to be in the midst of these sinful people with all the options that Christ had to face, it seems like in some ways through the eyes showing a good priest in the contrast to some very vile people, and they are incredibly vile. I mean, I don't know that I've been to a film before where I've laughed so much, because it was very funny, but at the same time felt so uncomfortable because of just how depraved the characters were all at the same time. And yet there was this strong sense of redemption, and to me, the more I think about it, there's a strong sense of Christ's presence in the midst of that kind of world that refuses to leave it, no matter what that world does to it. So that's sort of, I guess, what really got my mind thinking about this film, and kind of what I'm thinking about it right now, currently.
I was going to say, did at any point were you able to kind of shake this film, or has it like always been in the back of your mind?
It's kind of always been in the back of my mind, I think, obviously, as time has gone by, because I only saw it the one time, and I wish I would have had a chance to see it again before we discussed it, because I'm sure that I'm remembering some things a little differently than what they're portrayed in the film. But it really has been in the back of my mind, and there's been numerous conversations where something from the film will come up, and I'll use it as an example, you know, when I'm trying to talk to somebody about something. And it's just, yeah, it's just some very powerful, it's a very theologically rich movie, I think.
Yeah, and I really like what you say when you're talking about how it's almost like an allegory for the, like, Holy Week, and I want to get to that a little bit later. I also am very interested to kind of dive into your seeing it of Father James, who is Brendan Gleeson's character, as like a good guy, and seeing the townspeople kind of like as bad guys. And I'm wondering, like, what's going to give us that? And I want to answer that hopefully in just a little bit.
Sure.
But I want Elijah to kind of answer the same question. You know, like, what was it about this film where, well, I think when you saw me the Sunday morning after it came out, I think I was trying to talk to you about some whatever movie, and you were like, "Have you seen this movie?" And, like, you know, why was it stuck in your mind?
Yeah, I had a pretty similar reaction as Rick. Ironically, I asked you about the movie before I had seen it. So I was excited about it before I saw it. After I saw it, I was kind of depressed for a series of days. And even now, I'm doing this because I think it's worth discussing, and I think it's saying some important things, but, like, I've been kind of heavy all night just coming here to talk about it. Like, that's how kind of profound and heavy of a movie I think it is. One of the reviewers, a priest who interviewed Brendan Gleeson and the director, said, I had to think about this movie for a week or two or more after I saw it. So I think judging it by that standard, is it thought-provoking? It's a pretty, if that's the standard of measurement of a good movie, then this is an excellent movie, because it provokes a lot of thought. I would say even more so than Noah. Mm-hmm. Noah provoked a lot of thought and discussion, but it was kind of, it was that one scene where is he going to kill his baby. With this, it's like the whole movie just ratchets up the uncomfortability and the soul-searching of it. So I am interested to talk about it with the caveat that I feel kind of heavy talking about it at the same time.
Well, I mean, I would say go ahead and explore some of that. Like, what about it made it so heavy for you? Do you think that's just, like, anyone who goes to see this movie should have a pretty profound heaviness when leaving the theater? Or do you, as an Anglican pastor, feel some similarities to what we see in this movie? And, like, you're putting that on yourself, or it's stirring something in you. Like, where is that heaviness coming from?
Yeah, a couple places. So, first of all, I'd say I don't think this is unique to an Anglican pastor. The reason is, I think the writer and Brendan Gleeson do such a good job of making Brendan Gleeson a likable and identifiable character that I think anybody who goes to see this, within some large percentage of people, is going to resonate with Brendan Gleeson. I think that's part of the purpose of the movie, is to draw you in to the story through Brendan Gleeson's character, whether you're a priest or not.
Okay.
The thing that made me uncomfortable as I've thought about it, I think the movie is designed to be an all-out moral assault on your moral senses.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hit the highlights of how the assault ratchets up. So you got the guy that he's peeing on a painting of Christ or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of tame, but he's in front of the priest saying, "What do you think about this, Father? And watch me pee on this painting." I don't even remember what the painting is of. I just remember it was like kind of an ouch moment. Then you've got the guy, Brendan Gleeson's drunk, and he needs to be comforted. And the guy comes up and tells him the darkest, most hopeless story. This doctor that he can think of. And Brendan Gleeson just starts screaming at him, like, "Why would you say that?" And again, that's mild compared to how it gets ratcheted up. Then Brendan Gleeson gets beaten in the pub with a baseball bat. Then he gets his dog killed. Then he gets his church burned. Lots of other things. Gets to kind of see this homosexual act of the police chief just finishing up with his lover as he's coming to pay a pastoral visit. And then he gets shot in the head. So Maybe it's the chest and then the head. So it's just it's this steady ratcheting up of an assault, a senseless assault on your moral senses. In other words, it's just because I just wanted to kill your dog because I'm just shooting you to make a point. Like, I'm not even mad at you personally. So it doesn't make sense, and it's against a good man that you're identifying with, and you can't answer the why question. And so it just kind of leaves you there, no real sense of justice, no real sense of... I'm interested that you said redemption, Rick. I struggled to see the redemption in the movie. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Yeah. But that's why it was a very heavy and dark movie for me.
Sure.
I know it was purposeful. All those things were purposeful to identify with Christ and Holy Week and what he went through. But it didn't make it any easier that it was purposeful, yeah. I guess. Mm-hmm. That's how I would explain it.
If I could address the redemptive part of it, because I struggled with that too, and I may be reading more into the film than what's actually there, but it's okay to do that, I guess, too. That's kind of part of the journey. To me, the redemptive part of the film, and this is just how I'm interpreting it, I guess, I don't know how spoilery to be. I guess we.
I think Elijah went ahead and.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I guess
he didn't give away like the ending part two, but I mean.
Well, the it's in the ending, and I'll try not to give too much away. But I feel like there's that scene between the killer and then Father James's daughter. And there's not even words that said, there's a tear that's there, mm-hmm. but there's something about, to me, I feel as though in some way she is supposed to embody, the coming back of the Father. And so, you know, like almost like Christ coming back in his resurrection, to those that put him there, even with the words, you know, that we hear from the cross, Father, forgive them, you know, they know what they do. And there's a sense of, from what I remember, I see this look on his face in the prison cell when he sees her come in, you know, with tears in her eyes. And I guess I'm just choosing to believe that's the somewhat redemptive moment. There's nothing in the film that actually that actually says this is happening, but what I want to happen is I want there to be a moment, and what I'm choosing to believe and hope is that she's coming in there in the midst of her grief, deciding in a there's forgiveness even for you because my Father has embodied this out, knowing that you were going to kill him, he stayed, and knowing as awful as these people in this community has been to him. He wasn't going to let that deter him from his vocation and his calling to be Christ in the midst of those people and in the midst of that situation. And to me, I guess the redemptive part, it's like the love of God just does not stop no matter what, you know, and it's this mm-hmm. whole idea of it's going to come at you. And even in the darkest prison cell and with the most vile deeds we could imagine, there is this sense of the presence that is not willing to let us go. You know, and so that's probably way more than what, I don't know if we're supposed to see that, but to me that was the moment in the film that kind of did that for me, I guess.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think that was a moment of hope. I think she was continuing her Father's ministry of presence. So I do see redemption in that. It was a small glimmer of hope in a sea of darkness, I guess, is what was kind of overwhelming.
Yeah. Oh, it is, and you're right. I mean, it is a heavy film, and I think that's why there's so much humor interspersed in it too while you're watching it. Because I think if we were to watch that without, you know, just being barraged, like you said, an assault on our morals for 90 minutes with no levity, I don't think we could hardly take it. You know.
Yeah.
Which raises an interesting, it's kind of Shakespeare's thing of comic relief. Like, he's going to give you tragedy upon tragedy, but he's going to give you a little bit of comic relief.
Right.
So he can take you to another level of tragedy. And I feel like the director did a good job of that. In fact, there was one interview where he said, two scenes that I wrote were acted out back to back, and they were both so dark that it overwhelmed the movie, which is saying a lot for this movie.
Yeah.
That he took the scenes apart and had them put in different parts of the movie so that it would. So I think he's sensitive to to what he was doing, and the comic relief served him well and was absolutely necessary to digest the movie.
And I was going to say one more thing, too, about why I think that that scene at the end is pointing to forgiveness, is the last conversation that Father James has with his daughter, and he's talking. It's a very memorable line from that film. He said, "I think there's too much talk about sins and not enough about virtues." And she asks him, "What would be your number one virtue?" And he says, "I think forgiveness has been highly underrated." And and I think that's a beautiful moment in the film, and I find that to be very redemptive too, because even just the moments before the inevitable is going to happen to him, he's doing the job of a priest. He's listening. He's hearing confessions, and I even think we're starting to see some relationships being mended. And I've wondered too, like, we don't get to glimpse the town after the tragedy happens, but you almost wonder what the man's death would do to bring redemption about and to be a wake-up call to those people in some way too. But
Rick, I definitely don't think you're far off, because I think that's kind of how I ended up in the same place. Actually, one of the reviewers, when he was trying to give a very overarching idea of what the film was, or the choice that Father James had to deal with, he put it in such a way that he said he has the choice of reporting the threat or to offer himself up to atone for the church's sins, which, I mean, basically further goes into this allegory, because that's what Christ did for us. He's basically atoning for the sins of the church. And so when Father James, I keep wanting to call him Father Gleason. when Father James basically makes the choice to allow himself to be an atonement for the church, but we see right before that, this conversation that he has with his daughter, where he points out, "I think forgiveness has been highly underrated." He goes on to try to talk the killer out of it. There seems to still be hope that he can be like, "Hey, man, you know, like, we can move on from this." Like, you have to understand that there's things that are more powerful than revenge. And I think the way that it's portrayed, I mean, from, like I said, from the first 4 minutes when the person who eventually becomes the killer talks about being sexually abused by the church and how nothing was ever done about that and how it went on for years, and not wanting to forgive, only wanting to make an example and to make someone else pay as much as he could never see and or understand the power that forgiveness has. And so we only get, I mean, it's like 30 seconds in the very final scene of him in jail for what he's done to Father James, walking out and seeing the daughter who just was told, "I think forgiveness has been highly underrated." We see her crying, and when he walks out, I think he realizes the pain that someone else has, and it's his fault. And it's not just that she can forgive him for her own good, but the power of forgiveness will have to him as someone who perpetuated the crime. And when that happens, that to me is the redemption in this movie. The thing that said, it was like going through this incredibly rough, incredibly dark comedy to get to this point was worth it, because even though we would love to see Father James having, in his last week, save the entire town, everyone realize the error of their ways, become better people, etc., etc., the fact is that I think where Father James finally comes to is a place where he realizes that he is willing to lay down his life, even if only for one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's something else that struck me today that makes this movie difficult, particularly from a ministry or pastoral point of view. You like to think of your life as being significant, and you're helping change people and you're helping transform them. So this movie, to me, kind of raises the question, what if your ministry has absolutely zero impact on the people that you're seeking to faithfully serve, not because you failed in your duties, but just because they didn't want to receive it.
Yeah.
And so I think this movie in some ways assaults a little bit of the pride and some of the arrogance of American productivity and success. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm in his shoes, I would be looking back on my life like, I batted a big goose egg. Like, I hit nothing. Like, mm-hmm. Nobody responded. And, I mean, I didn't know what my daughter was going to do after I died if I'm him. So, it raises the question for me, is there any value whatsoever in ministry if it bears no fruit? In other words, if you have no impact, no visible impact on the people's lives around you, they remain cynical, they remain doing what they're doing, they remain cannibalistic in the case of the serial killer, nothing has changed. Does your life in ministry have any value is a question I wrestled with.
Yeah.
Is that kind of countered by the idea that you can really only judge your fruit by your own understanding?
For me, I'll tell you where it's taken me, which has been kind of cool, actually.
Okay.
So I've gone to the prophets Isaiah and Jeremiah, and Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet, and Isaiah is told, I want you to go preach your message. People are going to be always hearing, never understanding, always seeing, never perceiving. Go and make the heart of this people calloused, make their ears dull, and close their eyes. Otherwise, they might see, hear, and understand. So anyway, Jeremiah and Isaiah, among other prophets, are both given a task that's a thankless and a fruitless task. And the reason they did it was because God called them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it puts, from a pastoral or priestly perspective, I think it puts you back in the ultimate question of why you're doing what you're doing, which I think Brendan Gleeson, Father James, his life was a sacrifice to God.
Yeah.
And a beautiful sacrifice to God,
mm-hmm.
even if it had zero impact on the people around it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the movie starts off with that beautiful quote by St. Augustine, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like that first scene, if I recall, it's just a black background with white lettering that says, "Do not despair, one of the thieves was saved. Do not presume, one of the thieves was damned." And
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like we're struggling with that through the whole movie, because we really do want a clear-cut picture of, okay, who's in and who's not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, did this person ever get saved? Did this person ever become changed? And I think that Father James in the film just is simply embodying what it means to follow Christ, you know? And regardless of, you know, the idea of when Jesus tells us to count the cost, you know, take up your cross and follow me. I think we've been trained in our country anyway, and with a lot of pop Christianity and a lot of like the church growth movement and things like that, of like, oh, if you follow Jesus, things are going to be great and your church is going to grow and it's going to be, you know, you'll get all kinds of awards and everything. And and the whole idea, you know, several years ago I was having a conversation and I said, you know, what if your church is not growing because you are being faithful? You know,
that's a great question.
And that really is, I think, in our world, if we are going to be as faithful as Christ would have us to be, I think we're going to face just as much. Well, I mean, Jesus tells us himself, if the world hated me, they'll hate you too. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just kind of see that embodied. But I love the portrayal of him. It's almost like he has this surrenderedness to his vocation, to his calling, that I've been called to be like Christ. I've been called to minister to these people. And if it kills me, then to live is Christ, to die is gain. And I'm just going to be faithful to it regardless of what I get out of it. And I love that. I think we need to hear more of that in our society, because we aren't very good at hearing the gospel in that way sometimes because of our prosperity mindset.
I think so far we've looked at this through the eyes of Brendan Gleeson and Father James, the priest.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's intriguing to look at the movie a little bit through the eyes of some of the other characters.
Mm.
And I think maybe a good segue into that, if you don't mind me segueing, is Brendan Gleeson in an interview with from what I understand, he was being interviewed by an American priest in one of the magazines. He said, quote, "There's a sense of people being grateful that the issue was aired and addressed in both Ireland and Britain." So when they screened this film in Ireland and Britain, my sense reading into the quote was that people came up to him and basically said, thank you for putting this all on the screen. So I think maybe whereas from particularly from a pastoral point of view where you want the best for your sheep and you're hoping that your ministry makes some difference, you really resonate with Father James, and it can be disillusioning and disappointing, depressing. It intrigued me that people presumably from a non-ministry point of view who are just man or woman on the street were grateful that the movie kind of showed a real portrayal of people's lives and the impacts in particular of sexual abuse. And to throw one more little firecracker in there with that, I've started tossing around in my mind this idea of the killer. His name again?
His name was...
we'll say the killer.
Yeah, I've got it written down somewhere. I've forgotten his name. Jack Brennan. Jack Brennan was the killer.
Okay. Jack Brennan. So I've started tossing around in my mind this idea of Jack Brennan's act being a prophetic act. He says almost as much in the confessional. He says, to kill a bad man, nobody would pay attention to that. But, and this is in conjunction with the abuse that he experienced as a 7-year-old, 12-year-old. But if you kill a good man, now that gets people's attention. Yeah. And so it's like he wasn't, it was premeditated, but it was premeditated to make a point, which is somewhat of a definition of prophetic ministry. I'm going to do something kind of bizarre here, and I'm going to do it to get your attention and to make a point. So obviously, I don't think God would condone it, but I do think it has some similarities to a prophetic act in the Bible.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that at all, but he certainly is embodying something to make a point, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that people were mostly grateful because they were dealing with the issues of sexual abuse in the church in a way that pointed out, I think the director even said this, that it's not something that you can just get over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is something that will stay with you forever.
This is a life sentence, is how Brandon Gleason put it.
Or is it... Well, I would say in my case, I feel like we've maybe talked about that issue a lot inside the church and outside the church at this stage. Maybe not enough. And obviously, I mean, I don't have that I'm living with. So maybe just like the end of the film, you know, my dog wasn't shot, so I'm not crying about this. Man, maybe I should be.
Yeah.
But what stuck with me was just, I wish, or I was happy to finally see a pastor that I felt like I could be pastored by, in Father James. Because I definitely don't get that where I'm at right now.
Poor you.
Yeah. That's not what I'm saying at all. But because I feel personally that I'm very lucky to have, I would say, real and relatable and people who are fully bought in to caring about the people that they're supposed to be shepherding at the church that I attend. And I don't think that's normal, especially in most higher churches. And like I said, I wouldn't paint that with a brush that says this is always the case. I just says I feel like it's probably something that was not something people were used to seeing. You know, I think especially in film, you don't have them portrayed in a way where they actually truly care and or they're a relatable character. But there's lots of things that Father James does in this movie that I think makes him a relatable character that I'm like, if this guy gave me advice, I would probably listen to it. Do you think that that his character was too much, like too relatable, too unbelievable as like someone who would have been able to make it into the priesthood?
I don't know. I think a lot of his wisdom comes from his age and his experience in life, too. And I think that makes him very to me, very believable, because I think he's a very flawed character in some ways, too, when we see him. And maybe more so, I feel like it paints maybe a more realistic image of a man of the cloth than we're willing to usually see, with all the struggles that he had. Even the one scene you referred to where he was drunk, you know, in the one scene, and we're not usually thinking of our pastors drowning their sorrows in booze or whatever, but
at least not publicly.
Not publicly, right. But that, I mean, that was kind of an interesting perspective too, but I think that was, again, him struggling with all this. But I was just thinking, when you were saying, Elijah, about the perspective of others than the father in this film too, and it's kind of maybe a corny or cliched phrase that I've heard before, but I think we see it in this film. It's just the phrase hurt people, you know. Mm-hmm. and I think we see that, and if there's almost a, I wonder if the movie wants us in some ways to by the end have some sort of compassion for these people that it's almost impossible to have compassion for too. Because there's definitely that scene where, you know, on the beach when he's got the gun and he's kind of pouring out his emotions. I remember thinking, and even right now, and some of the things he says in the confession booth of what happened to him as a young boy. And I'm thinking, what does a human do with that kind of hurt and that kind of trauma, you know, and what do they do with it? And I think there's probably a case that could be made for every dark character in this film. At some point, there's some reason for that behind them that's very strong, that is almost enslaved them. And even the Father James himself, you know, he wasn't always a priest, and he lost his wife, and he even could be a character that, if it wasn't for the grace of Christ that had helped him to overcome, send him to a new calling and a new vocation, you know, he could have become one of these very bitter people that all he wanted to do was just hurt other people because, well, I've lost my wife and my soulmate, and I don't know what else to do, and my daughter's trying to kill herself, and it's just a very interesting contrast between a person who has opened themselves to the grace of God, who has maybe experienced just as much pain in certain other ways, as opposed to people who have not opened themselves to that grace that's there. But
yeah, one of the I'll answer, give another thought on my own question, and then something that Brendan Gleeson said. So I think one of the reasons that people expressed gratitude, and particularly in Ireland and Britain, when they saw this movie, was that it was an honest portrayal, number one. It was dealing with issues that have been kind of front and center, particularly in the Catholic Church, but probably also Protestant Church in Ireland and in England. And it was just done in such a way that it wasn't cheesy, it wasn't cutting corners, it wasn't trying to sugarcoat anything, and it wasn't giving answers. I mean, the director said at one point, our goal is not to give answers, but just to kind of tell the story. Sure. So I think people appreciated that, and a lot of people probably experienced it. And so I think it's interesting when a movie can bring up topics that you can't even bring up. I mean, usually movies get criticized for being superficial big bangs, explosions, and formulaic kind of money makers, but this one definitely went somewhere that I think most people probably aren't even willing to go themselves in the non-movie world.
Yeah.
And so I think it's profound in that regard as well. But one thing Brendan Gleeson said that I think one reviewer said this was the most common phrase that he said over and over again. He said, that just makes no sense. That just makes no sense. And at one point, the cannibal is saying, my favorite moment in life is when I see death enter the eyes of my victims, and then I know I am God. And Brendan Gleeson,
wow.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
And so that phrase, it just makes no sense that he's telling these parishioners over and over again. You almost have this sense of him trying to make sense out of the senselessness of their life, or help them see order in the chaos or the darkness that's come over their life, almost like he's battling with them about that. And I think it's a valiant fight, but it feels in some ways like a losing fight. But he's, I admire him for staying engaged in the fight.
Sure.
Well, I also like the fact that he is willing to not sugarcoat lots of things mm-hmm. with these people. And I honestly think that's something that most people want from someone that is in this position of, like I said, shepherding or not even discipleship. It's not even, like, most of these people aren't voluntarily entering into this relationship. It's just they know he's around, they know what he stands for, and most are trying to rile him up. Hmm. And I think they probably expect most pastors to be like, oh, that's so bad, or oh, you should probably stop, or yeah, I'm just going to not even enter this situation. But he walks into these people's lives mm-hmm. and doesn't allow them to shock him.
Yeah,
because like I said, he can see what they're doing. he can see. I mean, like I said, this like, there's so many allegories, and you know, Father James is a far cry from being actually Christ himself, mm-hmm. but he does so many things that I think are Christ-like. Like saying things to people that most people wouldn't say, mm-hmm. kind of being like, you think it's got to be this way or this way, but there's actually this other way, and that's a much bigger deal. Yeah. And that's probably something we should probably focus on more than what you're doing or what you think I'm going to tell you. Mm-hmm. And it's just this great wisdom that he carries. And like I said, he drops so many one-liners, and they aren't even like zinger one-liners. They're just, that's something to think about. I mean, we've already yeah. talked about him saying that, you know, forgiveness has been highly underrated and there's too much talk about sins, not enough talk about virtues. It's just,
there's no measure. The limits of God's grace have not been found yet.
Or the limits of God's mercy yeah. has not been, yeah, have not mm-hmm. been found yet when that one person is assuming that, you know, they're at,
there's no hope for me or something yeah. like that.
And then he even tells one person that like no one is a lost cause. Mm-hmm. So he's this eternally optimistic, unfortunate realist, like realizing mm-hmm. that like kind of what Elijah was talking about earlier, like where is his fruit? Mm-hmm. You know, so for someone who's putting up with so much crap, shouldn't God at least toss him a bone every now and then? Mm-hmm. And it's just not that way. And I think that's, I'm sure it's striking people in Ireland and or in, you know, in the greater Great Britain area where like this film is probably a little bit bigger, but in America I would say that that's radical.
Yeah,
the fact that this guy would lay down his life, or the fact that like he would assume that he is still doing what he's supposed to mm-hmm. when faced with death, mm-hmm. I think, you know, I don't feel like Joel Osteen is going to be, you know, laying down his life or his
right.
whatever, you know, for the gospel anytime soon. Not that I know that if he would or not, but it's not what we hear about. You know, yeah. we don't hear people saying sometimes, this is what you said earlier, Rick, you know, we're told that, you know, they despise Christ, they're going to despise us. Hmm. You know, like we're, it's not a very fun message, but to be reminded that, you know, following Christ truly, carrying this message, is going to put us at odds with the world. And we see a man at odds with the world still not losing hope for that world.
Yeah. I think this film itself is almost too honest for a lot of Christians to handle, too, to be perfectly honest. Because I had a conversation last night. I won't say who it was, but because they might listen to the show, and that's great. I hope they do. But
they should. It's probably the best thing they could ever listen to.
Best show they could ever, best choice they could make.
Second best podcast, right behind the Rickley James podcast.
There you go. but you know, the conversation was, well, I didn't see the film, but I looked it up, and it has this many bad words, and I was like, in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, that's the point. It kind of doesn't work without that, you know, and in some ways, because if the point is to try to show such a bleak reality and the starkness of sin versus the call of redemption to change, we don't do very good. You know, we often want even a sanitized picture of sin, like like, you know, well, sin is bad, but if we're going to show it on film, we need to show a cleaned up version of sin, because we need a Christianized version of sin, so that it and that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I understand, like, don't. It actually led me, when I wrote a post that I was going to be on the show, I kind of put a disclaimer after this conversation, kind of like, okay, I'm not saying send children and teens to watch this film necessarily. It does take a level of maturity. But what do you guys think, if I may ask your opinion? Because I think this movie is going to repulse a lot of Christians, and there's even been conversations like, oh, how can you as a Christian watch a film like that? And I guess my thought is like, wow, I've never been so moved as a Christian in a movie going experience as I have in this one. But just curious of you guys' thoughts on that, about the church and this movie specifically.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a youth pastor, I used to open parts of scripture with kids that hadn't grown up in the church, and I would read like the book of Judges, where the prostitute gets cut up into 12 different body parts, and one part is mailed to each of the 12 tribes of Israel. And the kids would look at the passage, then they'd look at the front of the Bible again, and they'd look at the passage, just like, did you slip a page in here that this is not really the Bible? So I think if Christians knew the Bible, they would find that the Bible is doing maybe even more than this movie does,
yeah,
to show degradation in action.
And that's true.
I mean, we need to see darkness for what it is. And if nothing else, the death of Christ portrays that, yeah, most starkly, I think. So it is a hard message, but it's a biblical message.
Yeah.
I keep coming back to this theme of faithfulness, that faithfulness doesn't mean you're successful. Like, faithfulness, yeah, can mean that you follow God as He's revealed Himself in His Word, even if everybody rejects you. I think there's also the issue of what Brendan Gleeson calls detachment, and he keeps on coming back to this in the interviews, and I think in the movie too. And the director even says at one point, "I struggle with detachment in my writing," but Brendan kind of made me change the script to make it more of an emotional connection between the father and the daughter, for example. And I think that issue relates to us today and to the church today in particular, in the sense of how do we deal with just seeing the movie, much less how do we deal with these situations in real life. I mean, if the movie's challenging, if you can't handle the movie, you're probably not going to be able to handle real life. And I think there's different approaches. I mean, go get a gun, like Brendan Gleeson literally does that. I think a lot of Americans, look at what's happening in Ferguson. Everybody's, yeah, going to get a gun. Get on a plane. He gets the plane tickets. Do you run? He considers running. Do you hide? I think the question that you're seeing, Rick, in terms of other believers, how they approach this, I think it raises a broader question about our attitude towards and our approach towards evil more broadly.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I'd say that I'd probably put this in the same category that we've kind of, like I said, we've kind of hit on the show a number of times before, especially when we start getting movies that are more direct conversations about the Christian faith. And that is, yes, like you said, Rick, use some discernment about who should be seeing these films, because in this particular case, you don't want like small children or maybe even younger teens to go see this film just because it's so weighty, you know, that it's not necessarily something that would be edifying to them. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think a movie can hit harder when the stakes are more real. Mm-hmm. And Elijah's already pointed out that when people have problems with movies like this, I'm like, I don't think you read the Bible, you know, obviously in a hyperbolic way, yeah, not in like, I don't think people actually are not reading their Bibles, but they're forgetting what's in the Bible. And this, comparatively to what's in the Bible, is still tame. And we talked about this when we talked about Noah earlier this year, or earlier in 2014, depending on when this show comes out, that this seems tragic, but if you actually read the Bible, there's terrible things that happen in the Bible. Like, this movie doesn't show anything worse than that. So, in my opinion, you can't really hit a very strong message unless the stakes of whatever story you're telling are real. And almost like a correlation between I don't want to get this wrong, but I'm going to paraphrase. When they talk about whoever has been forgiven little loves little, I think when the stakes are little, the lesson is little. And most movies that have been cleaned up and all the sin that is portrayed is so, I don't know, I want to say clean, you know, it's almost whitewashed. It's like, oh, that was bad. That's a wag finger bad. The grace that you need to overcome finger wagging sin is not very great, and thus the God you're portraying in your movie is more of a slap on the wrist God, you know, do better next time. But the God that has to exist to deal with the level of sin and just, I don't want to say horror necessarily, but like horrific situations that some of these people just push on each other. Like, it takes a big God to be able to deal with all of that. And I think because of a movie like Calvary, when the stakes are that high, when you have a priest making these types of decisions, so much that we relate to him because he does try to get on a plane to flee, you know, we understand that. Like, there has to be a God that can answer the whys and the is faithfulness enough? Like, what do you need to see the fruit of? Where is God in the killing of a good priest? Where is God in the molestation of children? And I think if you don't deal with that, then your God is not, you know, like I said, if your problems are little, you know, your God is little ultimately. Especially when you have a movie like this, it's obviously directly correlating to a Christian discussion. Not like we're talking about some, you know, blockbuster movie that we're finding the themes kind of woven around. Like, this is definitely dealing with the specific stuff that we talk about.
Yeah, I was just going to point out the irony of this, too, of, like, two different films that I think are on the opposite extreme of each other, but one would be considered the Christian film as opposed to this one that maybe some wouldn't. Kelly Riley in this film was in not only this film, but she also starred in Heaven Is For Real this same year. And I'm thinking, like, wow, my church will show Heaven Is For Real, but they won't show Calvary. And yet the one that's really, you know, Heaven Is For Real was one of the worst movies I've ever seen, honestly. It made no sense. And it was just like, I was like, that's the most forgettable film I've ever, you know, I just wouldn't even think about it except when I saw it at our church when they showed it. I was thinking, oh, she was in Calvary. What's she doing in this movie? You know, and I don't know. I just think that's kind of a good example to me of truth telling that's willing to step out and be courageous and show honestly the way people are and the way that life is and the honesty of sin versus a sanitized version where we have to clean everything up and it makes it meaningless and doesn't really help anybody.
Anyway. I was also thinking along those lines, just the skill with which this movie threads the needle. I mean, to think that you could make a movie about child sexual abuse and call it explicitly Calvary and connect it back to Jesus and do that in a non-cheesy, non-simplistic,
non-sweeping it under the rug.
Not pulling any punches away. Like, that's a very difficult needle to thread, to make an explicit connection to the gospel.
Definitely.
And to talk about some of the hardest realities we face today.
Definitely.
I'm really just struck again by the shooter's phrase. I'm kind of going back to the prophetic thing here. Did you cry when your dog died? Yes, I cried when my dog died. What about when those children were molested? Did you cry then? No, I didn't cry then. Like, I mean, basically you cared more about your dog than you did about the kids that the church you work for abused. Like, that's a powerful indictment.
It's a convicting line.
And so I think that's where I go back to the story actually having a the killing actually having a prophetic undertone to it, that that he's kind of trying to get society's attention, basically, and said, if you're shocked that I'd kill a good priest, then you should be shocked that innocent children have been abused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, hey, can I? I hate to be a party pooper, but I'm going to have to leave pretty soon because it's my son's bedtime.
Well, I was going to say it's about that time anyway. Okay. So this movie doesn't necessarily lend itself to the formula of the show so much with the come on moments and the favorite. Well, I'll put favorite quotation marks. But so what I'm going to do is I'm going to wrap all that into the final thoughts.
Okay.
So we'll wind it down by Rick. Tell us, you know, something that maybe, well, just give us your final thoughts. You know, it could include a favorite moment. It could include something that just didn't make sense to you. And then, you know, we've kind of already talked about, would you recommend it to people or whatever? What do you hope people get from it ultimately? But, you know, take the time to reiterate that.
Okay. Well, again, I mean, I probably summed it up in my beginning, but I do see this film as it's a very difficult film. But then again, I think Calvary was very difficult for Jesus. And I almost feel like this film, I'm hoping if I can find a copy by Holy Week this year, I want to make it part of maybe even my Good Friday practice, you know, to go back and watch this film, because I feel like it's something that, to me, my overarching look at this film is, you know, Jesus wasn't killed by sanitized, clean, you know, friendly bankers, you know, or whatever. Yeah. He was killed
by friendly sin.
Yeah, exactly, by friendly sin. He was killed by sinful people, and I don't know. There's something about the embodiment, something that really stands out to me. While Father James did go and seek out a gun, the fact that he throws it in the ocean, because it's almost like this whole idea that Christ is working on him in the midst of that and saying, okay, here I am to lay down my life, and if I'm to live that out like Christ. And so in a sense, Father Gleason does what Jesus does on the cross. Is I feel like he is a good man of God, I feel like he is absorbing the sins of this community upon himself. And throughout the whole film, it's been like he has been doing that. He's been going to these people that are very unappreciative of him and very mocking of him and very, I would even say, cruel. And it's almost this vision of Christ on Calvary who is absorbing that same thing, you know, is absorbing the sin of mankind, and yet with the idea that the arms are outstretched and that forgiveness is there and that this doesn't have to be where it ends, right even down to, you know, where he's visiting the cannibal on death row in prison and saying, you know, God's not even done with you here. As far as you think you are, he's not done. And it's so different than the way we're trained to look at it. So that's kind of my take from the film, I guess. I mean, for me, Calvary has become an allegory for Calvary. And the Jesus is Calvary. And so I just appreciate getting the chance to talk about it tonight. And I don't know that I don't know that I recommend it for everybody. I certainly wouldn't want to sit with my mom and watch this movie. I mean, honestly, and that's kind of a funny thing to say, but I think it would in some ways be, you know, forcing it upon someone who isn't ready for it either. It can be a very immoral thing to do, I think. And I don't want to like push this movie on people, but if you're willing to have some courage and be able to face some real mature themes and in doing so see the light of Christ, I would definitely recommend this to people who want to go deeper in that way, and especially understanding of suffering and sin.
Very good. I would say it's also basically like I do my summer series where we watch movies in person and talk about them, and this has definitely made the short list for next year. So I'm excited. I feel that, you know, wanting to rewatch it again too. But Elijah, kind of break it down.
Yeah, I think my concluding thoughts might be somewhat related, somewhat unrelated. Just seeing a picture of a town or a society where, as a priest or a minister of the gospel, a minister of the church, your very existence is held in utter contempt, and there's just this pervading cynicism towards you. I think some people would say that's somewhat where we're headed as a culture. You used to get patted on the back if you're a priest and asked to do honorary things at town meetings, and et cetera, et cetera. It used to be considered a position of honor. Now it's considered either irrelevant and increasingly something that's hostile. People are hostile too. So I think there's a little bit of a prophetic foreshadowing there maybe for us, which again is not unusual in the history of the church, but it's unusual maybe in the American context. Second thing, wrap-up thought would be wrestling with my own detachment. How do I engage brokenness? How do I engage evil, both in myself and around me? And I'm challenged by Father James's openness and presence and exposing of himself to those things. The final thought is what I would call time in the ground. So when Jesus was killed, he spent 3 days in the ground. You can think of those as three, from the outside perspective, fruitless, hopeless, dark days. On the road to Emmaus, the two disciples say, "We had hoped that he was the Redeemer of Israel, but now we're on our way out of Jerusalem going about our business." And so this idea that the time in the ground is a time of death, but what Christ has modeled, that the time in the ground, the time of death, is not fruitless. He says himself that a seed has to fall into the ground and die. And if it dies, it will bear much fruit. And so seeing, it doesn't show us what comes next after Brendan Gleeson's death, besides the daughter visiting her father's murderer in prison, which is a hint of the seed coming back to life. But that there is hope. Knowing the gospel story, we know that the time in the ground is not the is the segue, is the prelude, the necessary prelude, or the germination of the seed to come back and to bear fruit for life. So that gives me hope.
Cool. I don't really know what else I could say besides what you guys have pointed out. I do recommend this film to age-appropriate, thoughtfulness-appropriate people. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell anyone who exactly those are. That's self-discernment. Yeah. But this movie has been pegged as, what was it? They said, a film that is meant to be discussed. And I completely agree with that. I feel like if you watch this film and you don't talk to somebody about your thoughtful reactions or even your visceral, like instant reactions, if you can manage words as soon as you get done watching this film, I encourage you to just go with that. We've hit on a lot of stuff, and because this is somewhat of an allegory, I would not even come close to saying that we covered everything. So there's a lot to keep discussing. If you have seen this movie and you know there is something that really stuck out to you, I would really encourage you to comment on it, to keep this conversation going, because this, like I said, this is truly worthy of discussion. But with that said, Rick, before you go, can you let people know how they can follow what you're doing and get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. My website is rickleejames.com. I had to put the middle name in there because there was another Rick James, and he's not
really?
Me. Yeah, really.
Yeah, you're not Oswald Harvey. That's you're right. Not Oswald. So whatever his name is.
Yeah, that's right. Rickleejames.com, and then there's Facebook, which just do facebook.com/rickleejames. That takes you to my page there, and at rickleejames on Twitter. And I have a podcast called Voices in My Head, and I actually recorded an episode tonight just before we recorded. So, trying to get those out and
stamina.
But thank you, thank you so much for having me on. Like I said, I'll be heading to Nashville this week to record my next album, and really excited about that. So, be watching for it, I guess. But I love your show, and you have kept me company on the road when you haven't known it, because I listen to podcasts on long trips and things, and so it's been great to get to hear your perspective on movies. So thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's this is the second time you've been on the show, and I've really enjoyed having you both times, and I know that our listeners have as well. So I'm going to, as always, be trying to find more ways to get you in sometime during the 2015 year. So that's awesome.
Sounds good.
And as always, I enjoy having Mr. Lovejoy on.
Thank you. Thank you.
Elijah, how can people find the things that you do?
Well, I'm a pastor at Church of the Redeemer here in Greensboro, and also produce an outdoor ice rink in downtown Greensboro, so they can come find me at the ice rink, or they can look me up on our church website, redeemergso.org, my email and phone number's on there, or on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook.
Sweet. Well, you can follow me at Fizzification on Twitter, or you can follow the show at Real World Theo. If you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, then visit our website, realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L, worldtheology.com. Connect with us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you do enjoy it, please review the show. Leave us some feedback. Tell your friends. Let's have more people that we can keep company on those long drives. Because
that's right.
Sometimes you just want to listen to the smooth sounds of other people's voices besides mine. But again, thanks so much, guys, for taking the time to be here, especially, you know, not knowing when I'm going to have a chance to post this one. I just wanted to take the time to thank you, listeners, for always making us a part of your week. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye. This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com. So the thing is that I don't know when this one is going to air.
Mm.
I'm not sure when I'm going to put this episode
just
out.
Just call us your ace in the hole. That'll make
right.
us feel really
happy.
Bad.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Yeah. So.